This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 16 years ago, when the United Nations first designated December 1st World AIDS Day, the disease was already a force in popular culture. Remember the book And the Band Played On in 1987, or the movie Philadelphia. Tom Hanks won an Oscar in 1993 for his betrayal of a gay man fired from his law firm after they found out he had AIDS. Tony Kushner's two-part play Angels in America also debuted that year. It would go on to win a Pulitzer Prize and a Tony Award. But both AIDS and the way it's portrayed have changed. As more advanced drugs reduce the immediate threat, more and more Americans learn to live with the disease. The epicenter of new infections shifted from gay, white, and male to straight, black, and female. But does popular culture reflect that change? Is AIDS back in the cultural closet? Later in the program, the Salvation Army's red kettles get the cold shoulder from some major retailers. But first, AIDS and popular culture. What are the stories, images, or portrayals you see about AIDS and HIV these days? What do you think it says about the role of the disease in our society? Do they reflect your reality? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now from the studios of member station KQED in San Francisco is Judd Winnick, a cartoonist and writer for the monthly DC comic book Green Arrow. In the latest issue, one of its characters, Mia, tests positive for HIV. Judd Winnick, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Neil. It's good to be here.
One of the characters who tests positive is, in fact, the sidekick of Green Arrow, Speedy, but not the same Speedy that old folks like me might remember.
No, actually, she's going to be the new Speedy, and her testing positive actually is what brings about the decision.
To have her don the uniform and get into crime fighting.
Yeah. I mean, like many people who test positive, this is what sort of gave her the focus, and also to push Green Arrow into allowing her to do it. She's been vying for the job for a couple of years, and I think when testing positive, she was able to turn to him and say just that, you know, I might live 5 years, 10 years, 50 years, we don't know, but my life is focused now, and this is what I want to do, and I want to help people. So, you know, who are you to deny me that?
Hmm.
So that's how she became Speedy.
How significant is it that you did you choose a girl to be the person who got AIDS, or was that something you thought about as a natural plot development?
No, actually, the character existed before I got there. About 5 years ago, when Kevin Smith, the filmmaker, was still writing the book, he brought Green Arrow back and created this character, which was a young girl who'd been rescued from the streets. And she'd been, unfortunately, living as a prostitute and doing what she could to survive. And looking at the character now, 4 or 5 years later, I thought that, well, it didn't seem unlikely this is someone who would eventually test HIV positive. So it was a bit of happenstance, but to me it made sense. It made sense as a character, especially nowadays when we are finally acknowledging the fact that AIDS and HIV has, you know, unfortunately, a much wider community than before.
Hmm. I should point out that Green Arrow, for those who don't know, is a comic book with a history of exploring social issues.
Yeah, this has probably been going on for about 30 years. I'd say Green Arrow is probably the first comic to really take on racism. Speedy, prior to this, the original Speedy, who was Green Arrow's sidekick, had a heroin problem for a while. And this is going back in the early 70s. This is really before people were dealing with this in any kind of major way, especially in comics.
Mm-hmm.
Comics, in a way, because depending on who you ask, it being sort of an alternative art form, alternative media, what have you, I think we take on issues that mainstream might shy away from. And at the moment, the mainstream media really isn't talking about AIDS and HIV, I'd say, the way it did 10 years ago. They seem to have lost the interest in it, maybe because they don't feel it's as life-threatening as it was. It doesn't have that dire sense that it did before.
Well, even comic books might have addressed it, but might have addressed it sort of obliquely by having a superhero catch an alien virus of some sort.
We always do it through metaphor. Yeah, it's how a lot of issues are dealt with in comics. You know, I think some people probably might be fearful of the fact that if you deal with these things straight on, these real life issues, these real world issues, that our readers won't be able to handle it. But I think it's you have to acknowledge the fact that our readers have grown, and young or old, we are a slightly more sophisticated audience than we were 25 years ago. And who needs the alien virus caught by a superhero? We have a, you know, a red-blooded girl here who unfortunately has had to live with something terrible, and now this is, you know, the effect of it. But the upside is that she's going to try and make something positive of her life because of it.
And that's, I guess, the difference in what's happened with AIDS. As you say, it's not quite as fearful a disease as it was. Had this been a comic book issue, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, it would have been a three-part series.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think it would more have been about her contracting AIDS or HIV and then dying three or four issues later. The point of her character is she's going to be living with AIDS. As long as I'm writing the book, she'll be living with it as long as possible. That's the point of it. It's not about showing her dying. It's about her living with the illness, you know, living with AIDS, which so many people do. You know, that is the era we're living in now, is that people who are no longer, it was just 10 years ago that if you contracted AIDS, it was a death sentence. And the image that people had of people living with AIDS were guys who stepped out of a concentration camp covered in KS lesions. That's what they thought of when they thought of people living with AIDS. Mm-hmm. Now we're in a different place that you can actually live with AIDS. And it's sort of a double-edged sword. I'm not here promoting that AIDS is a lifestyle that everyone should pursue. It's hard. You know, this is a very stringent drug therapy you have to go on. It's enormously expensive. We talk about that in the comic. I don't want to send the message to our readers that, you know, that AIDS isn't something that's problematic. It's enormously problematic. But once you're faced with this life decision, it is something you can live with, rise above.
This is something you have some personal experience with.
Yeah. 10 years ago, I was on Real World San Francisco, and my roommate on the show was Pedro Zamora.
This is on MTV.
On MTV. Pedro was an AIDS activist, an AIDS educator. And it was 1994, and this is just about the first time that anyone had actually seen someone who was living with AIDS in a true sense. Pedro had a job. He had a boyfriend. He lived his life. It wasn't just a snippet of a news story or statistics on the news. This is someone that could actually grow to know and understand and actually grow to love. And unfortunately, less than 3 months after we finished filming the show, Pedro passed away. Mia's plight is similar to that of Pedro's in the fact that when the age that they contracted it and also what they're choosing to do with it. Pedro chose to rise above it, chose to try and educate people about AIDS and HIV. And Mia is going to go out there and try and save the world.
We are talking with Judd Winnick, writer and cartoonist of Green Arrow. You're listening to Talk of the Nation. If you'd like to join the conversation about AIDS and popular culture, our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Let's bring on Nick. Nick is calling from St. Paul, Minnesota.
Hi, Judd and Neil. I just wanted to say I have a comic book store in St. Paul, Minnesota, and the response to the storyline that Judd is currently writing has been very strong. It's interesting it's interesting that people look at it, and especially new readers that say, you know, gosh, how relevant this is, and what a great topic for, you know, in terms of timeliness and effect on our society. And I'm just absolutely pleased as punch with, they look at issues like this, and Judd is exactly right. It's not a space alien virus. It's a real issue. And the thing about it is it's really endeared a lot of the readers and a lot of people outside of comics to the notion of just how relevant comic books can be.
Can I ask you, Nick, what's the average age of the people who are buying that issue of Green Arrow?
Well, I think when Kevin Smith was writing it, and he was one of the writers before Judd, it was much younger. Now I'd say the demographic is between 14 to 16 to about 45.
Mm-hmm. And Judd Winnick, does it matter to you? Who do you think you're trying to communicate to?
I think both. I mean, actually, we write it with the 14-year-old and the 45-year-old in mind. Even books that I write that involve younger readers. We write it so that, you know, a younger reader will understand it, take it in, but also at the same time write above them. I'm not writing this didactic book, but we're not trying to simplify anything. There are many stories out there. You know, look at your movies and television shows. They can be watched by a 13 or 14-year-old, and then they can also be watched by a 40-year-old, and everyone can enjoy it. I think, unfortunately, in both those demographics, you have people who are ignorant about AIDS and HIV. This is just a real small way that we can hopefully just open up the dialogue. But at the end of the day, we're just really, truly hoping to tell a good story.
I don't mean to interject, but I was curious, Judd, what kind of response have you received from people, or has DC Comics received from people who aren't traditional comic readers who may have been drawn to this story because of the press that this particular storyline has garnered?
And let me, before you answer that, throw in one more part of that question, parents. But go ahead, Judd Winnick.
It's been enormously positive, which is, I have to be honest with you, what I expect. There's always a vocal minority who comes forward that this isn't a story that's appropriate for young readers. This isn't something that I want to see in comics. Comics are supposed to be a flight of fantasy and a place to escape. But truly, what are superhero stories about? They are about, fighting evil. They're about beating the bad guys. And they're about our heroes overcoming obstacles. And what could be a greater obstacle than a young woman who's facing a life-threatening illness to then turn around and want to do good, want to fight, and want to try and help the world? And I think people have been responding. Well, I know people have been responding in a very big way to that. We've had many, many, many positive responses from folks, particularly people who haven't read the book before, people who haven't even heard of Green Arrow before, are coming to the story with interest. It's unfortunate that people living with HIV are sort of starved for any kind of representation at all, even just in passing mention. There is a huge population out there that doesn't seem to be acknowledged very much in our media. I'm not saying that there should be a television show every single week that deals with AIDS or HIV, but considering the numbers of people out there here domestically and also worldwide, the discussion of AIDS and HIV seems to have disappeared. I don't know what's happened to it. The threat is still there, but our interest isn't there. I mean, we can have a larger conversation about the current administration and how they don't seem to be interested in it as well.
Yeah. It's interesting because in my store, I've had so many people that have read about it in the local Star Tribune or the Pioneer Press that are absolutely surprised that comics have transitioned from the something that was viewed as kind of throwaway literature in the past to something that actually has a voice and speaks to a crowd. You know, Neil, when you asked about the demographic, one of the really interesting things about this story arc that Judd's writing is a lot of people who have never looked at comic books before have come in to see what it's about.
Well, Nick, thanks very much for the call, and good luck.
You bet. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Thank you, Nick.
Let's take another caller. This is Nick, another Nick, this one in Oakland, California.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I had a question for Judd about the character. Why did he decide to make it female instead of male? I suppose that's a basic question, mainly because most of the people with HIV are male, and whether or not there would be some opposition to having a male character, being that it would insinuate that he was gay to begin with.
Well, for starters, I've been down this road before. Actually, I introduced a gay character in Green Lantern about 3 or 4 years ago, and a year after that, the character was a victim of a hate crime. I don't shy away from putting gay characters in my comics. As a matter of fact, go to the message boards. People hate me for putting gay characters in comics. But in this case, in this particular case, this character was already, she was already there when I got there. She was a character who was created 4 or 5 years ago, and I was merely picking up the story that was, I felt, already in place. Along those lines, many of us, and I'll say younger writers, and I'm not that young a man, I'm 34, we're sort of a generation looking to diversify comics, to keep it as diverse as our readership. For so long, comics have always been basically about white men, usually around 6 feet tall and usually with brunette or blonde hair. Those are superheroes. But that doesn't really reflect the world we live in and or our readership. And I think if you can have aliens and people from different dimensions into the world, you can also have people of color, women, and, gays and lesbians, which is what we're striving for. We're trying to find diversity in comics.
Nick, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And Judd Winnick, you're not really that old.
No. Well, thank Judd, you.
Judd Winnick, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Neil.
Judd Winnick, cartoonist and writer of the monthly DC comic book Green Arrow. We'll have more on AIDS and popular culture after the break. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's World AIDS Day. We're talking about AIDS in popular culture and what it says about the impact of the disease on our society. You're invited to join us, of course. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Tina Hoff, Vice President and Director of Entertainment Media Partnerships at the Kaiser Family Foundation. She sees pop culture as a powerful tool to keep the issue of AIDS and HIV awareness alive, and she's with us now from our bureau in New York. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil.
So what exactly is the Kaiser Family Foundation's connection to the issue of AIDS?
Well, while I wouldn't disagree that there isn't more that can be done to address AIDS, we certainly have some great examples of media companies that we're working closely with to take on this issue in a really new and different kind of way.
Mm-hmm. And what's your role in it?
Well, what we've done is formed partnerships with companies like Viacom and MTV and BET and worked with them to make HIV a priority. It's really a whole new approach to public education than what we've seen before, and I think has the potential to reach millions of Americans with crucial information about this issue.
Mm-hmm. Now, in other words, you go to entertainment companies and say, how can you work this into your plot lines?
Exactly. About 2 years ago, we started a partnership with Viacom. And as part of that effort, we worked with them to create very targeted messages, public service messaging, as well as longer form programming. And we work with them to get messages worked into storylines of the shows that they produce on CBS and UPN and other networks so that we can get information out much in the same way that Judd does in his comic books mm-hmm. through popular programming.
Now, we have an excerpt from a TV show here. This is from the UPN show One on One. The character Mark Flex Washington, played by Flex Alexander, is hanging out at the barbershop with his friends.
So Flex, it's Friday. Any big plans, player?
Nah, probably just gonna catch the Wizards game tonight, chill out, take an HIV test, you know, hit a club.
Whoa. What are you doing before the club?
Chill out.
No. After chilling and before the club. What are you doing?
That's right, you heard me. I'm taking an HIV test. So, Candy, how do you like the weather we're having?
You know, Flex, you don't have to be ashamed. I get a test every 6 months. Or every 2,000 miles, just like an oil change.
That from the UPN show One on One. Did you play a role in getting that bit on that program?
We did. Through our partnership with Viacom, we, at the beginning of each season, go down to L.A. and meet with all of their writers and producers and introduce them to people living with AIDS, experts in the field, the latest information, and work with them to try and figure out how to get these kinds of stories into their shows and basically communicate the kind of information that you heard taken up in that show, the importance of getting tested, some of the real issues that people confront when they're thinking about doing that so that we can break down their fears and preconceptions about these issues.
Now, I assume you didn't write the dialogue, but the idea of treating an HIV test as something you normally do after a certain period of time, that was the message you were trying to get through.
Exactly. I mean, we've also communicated messages about prevention, of course, remains important. The importance of communication and testing remains really crucial. And I think that particular episode did an excellent job at dealing with some of the real issues that people face when they're thinking about getting tested and also illustrating the reasons why it's important to do it.
In a way, I guess this is product placement for issues as opposed to, a brand of soda or something like that.
Exactly. And I think we certainly know how successful this has been on the commercial side and the kinds of efforts that we're undertaking with our media partners at Viacom and MTV and BET is exactly that, using the power of their brands and their reach to reach millions of Americans with important information.
And I know that people in advertising say it matters a lot more if James Bond takes a sip of your soda than any number of advertisements. Is that the same experience you have if embedding the messages in programs like that clip we just heard, is that more effective than public service announcements?
I wouldn't necessarily say more effective, but I think it's an important element of the campaign, and we do both kinds of messaging. Our research has certainly shown that when you can integrate a message like this into a storyline, into characters that people respond to and relate to, that it can be incredibly powerful. We've done studies with some of the programs we've worked with to look at awareness about a particular issue before and after the show has taken up a topic. A couple of years ago, for example, with the TV show ER, where we worked on a storyline about a sexually transmitted disease that is incredibly common yet widely unknown called HPV, we found that before the show aired an episode that it talked about this issue, just 24% of ER viewers had ever heard of HPV. 1 week after the show did a pretty short storyline about this issue, those percents had almost doubled. We went back and surveyed viewers again a couple of months later to see whether that information stuck, and found that while their awareness was higher, it dipped a little bit, which for us said you can certainly have an impact, but you've got to be out there doing this over and over again as well.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another listener on the line, and this is Jonathan, who's joining us from Ames, Iowa.
Hello, how are you doing today?
Very well, thank you.
I just wanted to say that being positive for 6 years now, when I first became positive, it seemed like people demonized the people living with HIV and AIDS. And through education now, it seems like it's starting to go away. And now that we've got getting more exposure, that showing that they're real human beings, that they're actually human beings and not these, you know, child molesters and everything else that people imagine these people are.
Mm-hmm.
And having good positive role models like Pedro Zamora, whom I got to see right after I was diagnosed, showed me I could actually live and do something positive with something that was so horrible in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously the day you're diagnosed has to be pretty much the worst day ever.
I lost my job and was told I was HIV positive all at the same time. And the first thing I thought was, I'm dying. I'm going to be dead here in a year. And seeing a positive role model of Pedro, you know, seeing that somebody can actually live with it was so invaluable. I do a lot of education now, and I work with people who are newly infected, and so many of them still think it's a death sentence. And so many young people that are getting HIV are committing suicide because they think they're going to be dead anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great to see more and more positive role models showing that HIV is a livable disease.
You mentioned, Pedro, when you were first diagnosed, what are you seeing today?
I'm seeing a little bit more. There are more shows, it seems like, that deal with it. Showtime's Queer as Folk has a full-time cast member that, you know, was diagnosed. You see that people can live with this disease as normal human beings, and that they are normal human beings. They aren't, you know, the demon some people make them out to be, and that not everyone who's HIV positive is out there trying to give it to everybody else because they're mad.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan, I'm sorry, go ahead, Tina Hoff.
I was just going to say those are the very issues that we're trying to confront with the shows that we're working on, and I think you're right, whether it's a real-life person like Pedro Zamora and the work of The Real World, or some of these characters on TV shows who audiences relate to as well, a big part of what they can achieve is helping to break down the stigma around this disease and have people both be more comfortable with people living with HIV, but also recognize the importance of protecting themselves, getting tested, and just being more informed.
Jonathan, thanks very much, and continued good luck.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Bye-bye. Let's talk now with Dan, and Dan is calling from Rochester, New York.
Hi, how are you? I hope you don't mind my calling for myself.
That's okay.
My question for, I think it's Tina, was what does she think that the Viacom and other networks are hoping to gain from integrating a very important message into the storyline? Is there a quid pro quo, buying extra credibility, or does she really feel that this is coming from a public sentiment that this needs to be done for the benefit of society?
And Dan, I'm going to hang up on you because your cell phone is betraying you.
Thank you.
But thanks for the question. Go ahead, Tina.
Well, I should say this is work we've been doing for a number of years now. We first started working with MTV back in 1997 on the very first coordinated pro-social kind of campaign on sexual health issues, and it's still ongoing today. The initiative with Viacom, which is entering its third year next year, has received almost $500 million in free advertising campaign in the first 2 years. So these are really tremendous commitments that we're seeing.
Well, that's what they're doing. Why are they doing it?
In terms of why they're doing it, I think it's two things. One, it makes good business sense. Our partners know that these are issues that affect and interest their viewers. When we started working with MTV, we went into them with research that showed that sexual health issues were forefront on the mind of their viewers, and they responded very strongly to that. So it just, quite frankly, makes good business sense. Secondly, I think we've been able to show them that their investment yields real results. And as any good business person or nonprofit person wants to know, is that what you're putting into this and the return for all of this airtime is actually having an impact. And we've been able to document that.
One of the most prominent works that focuses on AIDS over the past 20 years or so was the play Angels in America by Tony Kushner. As we mentioned earlier, it debuted on Broadway in the early 1990s, won a Pulitzer and a Tony Award. Then it was made into a movie, which was broadcast as a miniseries on HBO last year. Of course, the story is set in the 1980s. In the HBO miniseries, actor Justin Kirk plays Prior Walter.
This disease will be the end of many of us, but not nearly all. And the dead will be commemorated, and we'll struggle on with the living, and we are not going away. We won't die secret deaths anymore. The world only spins forward. We will be citizens. The time has come.
Actor Justin Kirk in the 2003 HBO version of Tony Kushner's Angels in America. Joining us now is someone who not only lived through the start of the AIDS epidemic, but chronicled it through the lens of pop culture. David Wagoner is founder and publisher of A&U magazine. It used to be called Art and Understanding. It's a monthly journal that covers the issue of AIDS through culture, and he's with us now from his office in Albany, New York. And thanks very much for being with us today.
Good to be with you here on World AIDS Day.
As somebody who's seen the shifts over the years as AIDS has spread and as the treatment of it has changed, how do you think the impact of Angels in America plays out today? Is it still as dramatic and as poignant as it was?
I think it's more powerful than ever. I think when it debuted, of course, it was on Broadway, and that is a limited audience. A fewer number of people would have seen it on Broadway than would have seen it on TV. And I think that's an important point that, in the beginning, when A&U first started, it was called Art and Understanding, and our lens was on the popular arts. But as we're seeing now, the disease is shifting its demographic away from more of a upper middle class white male gay disease, which it was when A&U started in 91, to more of a disease of the poor, minorities. And that's important. That's a different shift than you're seeing in Angels in America, as you know the storyline.
Sure. And do you see pop culture reflecting that change?
I do. I see people as diverse as Elton John and even Eminem writing songs with AIDS content in them. And that's kind of shocking, considering, you know, Eminem has not always been known as very friendly towards the gay or AIDS community, but he does seem to be shifting his mindset lately.
One could point out both of them are white.
That is true, but then again, Eminem is considered a hip-hop artist, and actually his song is number one right now in the country, so he is reaching out. Maybe he's changing his tune.
Mm-hmm. Are there other, you know, landmarks that you see today of changing attitudes to reflect the change in the disease, and who gets it?
Yeah, I think there is a lot of programming changes. As you know, as we've talked about on the program today so far, that Viacom has done an excellent job through its various networks, MTV, VH1, BET, to introduce storylines into programming that show the shifting demographics. It is going to take a while, though, for...
There always seems to be a lag. Yeah.
There is always a lag in American pop culture.
Hmm. We're talking about AIDS and popular culture on World AIDS Day. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another listener on the line. Amy joins us from Dearborn, Michigan.
Hi, Neil. Great show today. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I was just wondering about the musical Rent. I love to go see it when it's in town. I live in the Detroit area, and I love to go see it when it comes. And I think that that's one of the ways for people to kind of understand what people with HIV/AIDS are going through. And I just wanted your guests to comment on the impact the musical Rent has had on our society, too. And I'll take my response off the air.
Thanks for the call, Amy. David, I think that's up your alley.
I'm not quite sure what the question was. I'm sorry.
She was asking about the influence of the musical Rent.
Rent. Okay. Yes. Rent is an important way of diversifying the audience, I think, because as it goes from Broadway out into mainstream America, middle America, if you will, then that means larger numbers of people can see it, not people just in New York City, but, you know, throughout the country.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you both, Tina Hoff, as you try to promote positive messages, and you, David Wagner, as you look at them as they've filtered through popular culture, are there negative messages still out there today? Tina?
You know, I certainly think there's a lot that we need to do to keep improving the quality of information that's out there. In fact, you know, a big part of the foundation's work is to monitor what the media covers and its impact on its audiences. What we're really trying to do with the campaigns and the partnerships that we have with media companies, though, is leverage the indisputable reach and influence that they have to get out good messages. And I think we've had some success at doing that. And I think, of course, there's more that you can always do.
And David, you'd earlier mentioned that Eminem, for one, had not always been regarded as friendly to gays. It's not exactly congruent with the issue of HIV/AIDS, but it's
right.
Not unconnected either. But again, comedy is and rap are dangerous media.
They are, and also the written word sometimes. There's been a bit of a talk in the last year or so about the down low, the quote-unquote down low. Our January cover will be with Keith Boykin, who was on American Candidate, and he wants to discuss why the down low is demonizing certain members of society. In other words, it could become the new scapegoating mechanism, as AIDS was for gay men in the 80s. He's afraid it will become the scapegoating mechanism for blacks and Latinos in 2003, 2004, 2005, and forward.
And down low are men who see themselves as straight who also have sex with men.
That's true. J.L. King actually introduced it in a wide scope on the Oprah show, and it just, you know, took over the headlines then. But Keith Boykin is addressing this in his new book, and we are publishing an excerpt from it in January discussing how popular culture can also demonize as well as educate.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about AIDS and popular culture. Our guests are David Wagoner, the founder and publisher of ANU. It covers AIDS through the prism of pop culture. Also with us, Tina Hoff, Vice President and Director of Entertainment Media Partnerships at the Kaiser Family Foundation. If you'd like to join us, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Today we're talking about AIDS in popular culture and what it says about our society's attitudes towards the epidemic. Our guests are David Wagoner, founder and publisher of ANU Magazine, a journal that covers AIDS through the prism of pop culture, and Tina Hoff, Vice President and Director of Entertainment Media Partnerships at the Kaiser Family Foundation. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. We have an email, totn@npr.org is that address, from Kate in Minneapolis. What about soap operas, she writes. I watched General Hospital about 5 years ago. They had a fantastic storyline involving major characters who were HIV positive. One passed away. Now the other character is living with it. A very compelling story that had a human face on it. Soaps, like comics, often address social issues like this before the mainstream media picks up on that. David Wagner, would you agree?
Yeah, that's true. Back in 1998, we did a cover story about seven different soap operas who had leading characters on their shows. I think a few of them have actually passed away as characters in the shows, but it did show a positive light on living daily with HIV. And these characters were not, you know, just your quote-unquote, I guess you could say, demonized characters of society. They were, you know, your average heartthrobs, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it made a lot of impact on the 80 million Americans who watch soap operas every day.
Tina Hoff, are soap operas amongst your targets?
They certainly are. We actually had the team from CBS's daytime programming join us for our briefing a couple weeks ago in L.A., and I know they're interested in working on some new storylines to address some of the issues that are affecting people living with HIV today, and I think they're an incredibly powerful means of getting out information. People relate to soap operas in a way that they don't to many other shows. These are characters that come into their homes and that they relate to very personally.
Let's get a caller on the line. Bill is with us from Minneapolis.
Hello.
Hi.
I was just commenting, basically, first of all, on that last email, I remember watching, hearing about gay men even existing in the world, watching Rockford Files when I was a kid. But my comment was basically kind of a lot of times I'm a fan of Lawrence Lessig, and pop culture to me is kind of the free market, or it represents kind of a free market, and a true one. And sometimes I guess my question is how much do you see this kind of being a play out of the different kind of ideas? Oftentimes I think pop culture introduces ideas and without any kind of taking any kind of responsibility afterwards. And I'm wondering how much you see that as kind of a valid.
David, why don't you start?
I think pop culture is valid. It's certainly the current pulse of the nation, culturally speaking. But it also, I think, pop culture is something that can be also imported exported to other countries. I know that a lot of AIDS films that were created in this country are now shown in third world countries and oftentimes used as fundraisers. I think that this is kind of an interesting idea, to say the least.
And on that point of taking messages outside the U.S., we're doing a lot of work with our partners here in the U.S. to take this model of working in partnership with a media company who is devoting its resources and assets to AIDS to countries like Russia and India, where AIDS remains an issue that isn't even talked about on a large scale today. We had a new initiative launch in Russia just this week.
David, getting back to Bill's point, though, do you agree that pop culture is this vibrant free market when a lot of it is dominated by huge corporations like, Viacom?
It can be, but I also think that there is a sense of responsibility beyond just the corporate. I think a lot of publications like ANU, which is a nonprofit, by the way, even though we are a glossy, slick publication, we take responsibility in our coverage of AIDS content. We don't always say, "Oh, it's great," just because it has AIDS content. We critique everything that we see, everything on television, in the movies. For instance, a movie that's coming out in a couple months, starring Sandra Oh, called Three Needles. You know, we weren't entirely glowing in our review of the movie, even though we had her on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
So we do take responsibility. Pop culture. Yeah, it is driven by market forces. She obviously got $20 million to fund the movie, but possibly because of her name value. You know, she's a big star now. You know, she was on Arliss, and she's done about 18 films. So, but, you know, we're not going to be just, glowing in our review of a film just because we have it on the cover. It's our responsibility as media to cover this through the pop culture lens, but also to critique it and also to say what's wrong with the fact that it is sort of driven by market forces.
Bill, thanks very much for the phone call.
Really?
Bye-bye. And we'll end with this email we got from Kevin Daly, who the subject line reads, "Did you see the condom in the comic strip Zits today? It is unusual and somewhat of a relief," he writes, "to see a condom in a mainstream newspaper comic strip, even if it is being used to cover a pencil." And the disease that the character was worried about was the flu and not AIDS, but I guess every step is a small one. Thanks to you both very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
That is Tina Hoff, Vice President and Director of Entertainment Media Partnerships at the Kaiser Family Foundation at our bureau in New York. And David Wagner, thank you for your time today, too.
Thank you.
David Wagner is the founder and publisher of ANU and joined us on the phone from his office in Albany, New York.